Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, I'm delighted to welcome a new commentator to the podcast series, Rabbi David Levenkreus. Rabbi Levenkreus is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as the Pardes Director of Special Projects. I'd also like to wish all of our American listeners happy Thanksgiving for the holiday coming up this week. This week, Rabbi Levenkreus discusses Parshat Vayishlach. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreus.
Thank you, Larry. The topic of this week's class is called This Foolish Diener Who Runs About in the Land, which is a quote from Goethe. My name is David Levenkreus, as you heard, and I teach at Mechon Pardes in Jerusalem, and I'm very, very happy to be doing my first podcast. She was asking for it. Well, if people want to invest in get-rich schemes, they should expect to lose their money. He ate fatty foods all his life, so I don't know why he didn't expect not to get a heart attack. I'm sure we've often heard statements like this, statements that we often call blaming the victim. When something bad happens to somebody, we somehow find that the person who the bad thing happens to is somehow implicated or culpable. There are many reasons we do it. Sometimes, in the case of very often with women, it's a question of prejudice. Sometimes it's because it gives us a feeling of control. Hey, that happened to him, but it wouldn't happen to us. There can be all different reasons why we may blame the victim. And we see a lot of this in this week's parasha, where right in the middle, we have the story of Dina, who was raped by Shechem. Let's first look at the story in context, and then we will have a look at how the rabbis understood what happened. The parasha starts, you will remember, the parasha Vayishlach starts with Esau and Jacob making up after many, many years of unhappiness on Jacob and Esau's part. They make up, they become friends again. Esau leaves, and Jacob goes to camp near the city of Shechem. And we then read that Dina goes out to visit the girls of the land. There's a guy called Shechem. He sees her. According to most interpretations, he rapes her. He then falls in love with her, wants to marry her. He goes to Jacob's brothers, and they say, look, you can marry our sister as long as the entire town is circumcised. The men of the town do circumcise themselves. And then on the third day, when they're all sore, Shimon, Levi, and his brothers come and attack the town, killing them all. And the entire story starts with the line, Vatetze Dina bat Lea, Ashe yalda li Yaakov, Lirot bivnot haaretz. Dina, the daughter of Leah, who she bore to Yaakov, goes out to see the daughters of the land. And there are three distinct ways, I think, of reading this pasuk. There's the simple, clear reading, which could be very pastoral, very, very unnoticeable. Dina's a young girl, according to many commentaries, 12 years old. What could be more natural than for this girl to go and want to go and meet other girls of her age? And indeed, the pasuk can be read this way, Vatetzed Dina bat Lea, Ashe yalda li Yaakov, Lirot bivnot haaretz. She's going out to meet companions. And in fact, although Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch's comment on the whole is quite negative, part of it can be read as understanding it in this way, where he says she went forth to look about the daughters of the land so that she might meet the foreign girls. She was a young girl and therefore eager to see new things. Others see the Ramban, the Nachmanides, as reading it this way as well. It's a rather weak argument, but they understand from the fact that the Ramban does not criticize Dina in any way, that he sees that she did nothing wrong. Of course, arguments from absence or for something not being there are always problematic, but nevertheless, there is one level in which it can be read as Dina having done nothing wrong and simply having gone out to meet the daughters of the land. However, even without going to the classic Jewish commentators, this can be understood negatively in Babylonian, Akkadian, and other languages, the word vayetze or vatetze often has a negative connotation when applied to a woman. In Babylonian, it's connected to the word prostitute. In Akkadian, to a housewife who conducts herself improperly outside her home. And indeed, there's a very, very powerful idea that vayetze, which means to go out, is positive when it comes to a man, but vatetze, it's not regarded as acceptable for a woman. A woman is supposed to stay in her house. They're not supposed to leave their encampment. And so even on a contextual, on a pshat level, it can be seen that the story can be seen in some way as criticizing Dina for doing something that was certainly not acceptable in those times. When, however, we get to the classic Jewish commentaries, we see full force for the criticism of Dina. Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch writes, "She may well have brought it upon herself by going out from the close circle of the family and entering into the midst of strangers." Rashi quotes a midrash which compares Leah to Dina. We'll remember that Leah bought a night with Yaakov. Yaakov was having sex with Rachel all the time, and Leah buys a night with Yaakov from Rachel by giving her some mandrakes, a kind of a flower. And Rashi says that both of them, in both cases, Rashi points out that the word vayetze is going. Both of them are going out. Both of them had this habit of vatetze, of going out. And from this we have the proverb, ke'ima kebita, like mother, like daughter. If we look at the original, where this midrash comes from Bereishit Rabbah 81, we see something far, far stronger. We read, "There is no woman who is truly a whore, whose daughter is not also a whore." They said to him, "If so, was Leah, a matriarch, a whore? He said to them, and Leah went out to meet him. She went out made up like a whore. And so, and Dina, the daughter of Leah, went out." We see a tremendous blackening, a tarnishing here of both Dina and Leah. Both of them are seen as women who somehow went out of the acceptable realm, who behaved in ways unbecoming a daughter of Israel, who's somehow behaved in sexual ways that were seen as being beyond the scope of acceptability. Later on in Bereishit Rabbah, there's an even more difficult midrash. Rav Barachia said in Rav Levi's names, "This may be compared to one who was holding a pound of meat in his hand, and as soon as he exposed it, a bird swooped down and snatched it away." Similarly, Vatetze Dina bat Leah, and Dina the daughter of Leah went out. Miyad, immediately afterwards, Vayira ota Shechem ben Hamor, and Shechem the son of Hamor saw her. A very, very powerful blaming of Dina for what happened to her. She behaved in a certain way. What can we expect? Shechem saw her. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman said, "Her arm became exposed. Again, she was not tznua, and therefore she was in some way complicit in what happened to her." If we go on in the Pasuk, Lirot, that she went to be seen. What did she want to be seen? Was she checking out the competition? Was she showing herself off? The Samaritan text, the text of the Shomronim, which is the Samaritans, who are a sect who separated from the Jewish people, have a different version of this Pasuk. And in their version it says, she went out to see and to be seen. She's staking her claim. Similarly, who was she going out to look? Bivnot ha'aretz. We know that the girls of the land, the women of the land, were not held in very high regard. The patriarchs did not want their children to marry the women of the land. And even Esav in Bereshit 28:8, even Esav, we read, understood that the Canaanite daughters were displeasing to his father Isaac. So what we basically have over here is, I'd almost say, a twice-time destruction of Dina. First she's destroyed first she's harmed and hurt by Shrem, and then harmed and hurt by the later commentators who very, very much exemplify the idea we've seen before of blaming the victim, of somehow holding Dina responsible for what happened to her. How is one to deal with this? I would like to suggest a novel rereading of the situation, which I think can help us understand how to deal with difficult texts, and which I think will give us insight into Jacob's family, and will also help us understand something about how to build a society. If we look at the end of the parasha, we read about Esav and his children, and of course Edom is from Esav, and Amalek, the mythical enemies of the Jewish people, are also from Esav. Amalek, will remember, attacked the Jewish people on their way out of Egypt when they were tired and exhausted. And in Devarim 25, verse 17 to 19, we have the famous words, Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. Bederech, betzedchem emitzrayim. On your way as you left Egypt. Asher karcha bederech, v'yaznev becha, kol anech shalim acharecha, v'ata ayef v'yagea. When they encountered you on the way and you were tired and exhausted, they cut off those lagging to your rear, v'lo yira elokim, and they did not fear God. And a few words later, timcha et zecher Amalek, you must obliterate the memory of Amalek. Amalek, the classic enemies of the Jewish people, attacked us when we were down and out, and we have a mission to destroy the memory of Amalek from the world. In many ways, the story of Shimon and Levi and the brothers, other brothers of Jacob attacking the Shechemites is very different from the story, but there are similarities. In both cases, we have massacres. In both cases, we have people being attacked when they're tired. The Shechemites from their Brit Milah, from their circumcision. Over here with Amalek, they attack the weaker people who are lagging to the rear, who are tired and exhausted. In both cases, we have stories of Am Yisrael being hurt in some way. But I think that there's another similarity as well. I once read a beautiful insight on the story of Amalek, and it said something very interesting, and that is, why were there people at the back who were lagging in the rear? Why did the caravan, why did this group of Israelites, why did they not make sure that everybody was together? Why did they allow the weak and tired to drag behind? Was there not something wrong with the way that they were traveling? Not to blame the victim, not to say they deserved what happened to them, but to say in what way could they have prevented the situation from happening? What safeguards could they have taken in order for this not to happen? What does it say about Am Yisrael? I think the same critique can be ascribed to what we have over here in with the story of Dina. She's a young girl, she's at home, she's getting bored, she wants to go and visit the daughters of the land. Why is it that her brothers didn't go along with her? Yes, it's dangerous out there. Yes, it's not such a good thing to be doing. But a girl is going to want to have a little bit of a social life. Why did they not protect their sister? Not that they're guilty. Not that it means that they deserved what happened to them. But in what way could they have created a climate in which this would not have happened? And I think with this insight, we can understand a number of things. The first is, why was their reaction so strong to what happened to their sister? Why was it so extreme in terms of destroying the entire town? And I think we could be talking about some boys who are feeling very, very guilty, because certainly according to the norms of the time, they did not take adequate care of their sister. I think this insight, this idea of asking why they did not help their sister, also helps us deal with texts which seem difficult to us. Not that instead of blaming the girl, the 12-year-old Dina, not that instead of blaming the girl, we now blame the brothers. That's not where we're going. But rather, that the text stays the same way. The text stays as it is, but we ask different questions on the text. We ask questions which come out of our insights, and when we do this, the story of Dina becomes a different story, the story of how we need to make sure always to have safeguards in the world in order to be sure that things like this don't happen. But it can be even more than that. There is even a greater dream than that. And that is, if we look at the story in the context of what happens in Jacob's life, it is in fact a very pyrrhic, a very short-lived period of peace that he has. We read about in Breishit, Lamed Gimel, Psukim Echad Ad Yud Aleph, Breishit, Genesis 32, 1 to 11, of the reconciliation of Jacob and Esau, of the rent in the family being healed. Finally, Jacob has a sense of wholeness. And no sooner has this happened, when Simeon and Levi defy their father, avenge the crime against their sister without telling their father, and against their father's wishes, they act deceitfully. Dina, too, gets into trouble. It seems as if Jacob is not saved from the tzarot, from the difficulties that he is having. And I think this insight can help us to understand that there are two very, very different family dynamics that often go on. You have families like Jacob's family, which basically are very, very problematic families, where you engage in damage control. Esau and Jacob have been bad friends for many, many years, and they now get together. They now are reconciled. But basically, things are still not good between them. Almost as soon as they reconcile, they separate. What this insight is suggesting is a different vision, a vision in which families take care of each other, in which members of a family look out for each other, a vision in which there's some sense of mutual responsibility. And when you have this, what really happens is that bad things are often prevented from happening. I remember once an army general said to me, what is the purpose of an army? And many, many people had many, many different reasons and many different suggestions. But the one that he went with, and which he thought was correct, which I also think is correct, is that the purpose of an army is to prevent wars. And the purpose of a family is to be strong and close to each other and to care for each other in such a way that bad things don't happen. This doesn't mean that had Dina gone with her brother, this would not have happened. They could have attacked her brother too. It doesn't mean that if families that are close and who care about each other, bad things never happen. They do. But what it does is it creates an atmosphere in which these things are less likely to happen. And I think this can give us this insight into the idea of destroying Amalek as well. Amalek can be destroyed by physically getting rid of all the bad people, or in some way getting rid of bad people. But yet there is another thing. The best way to get rid of Amalek would be to create a world, not just a family, but to create a world in which people really cared about each other, a world in which people really, really worried about each other and created structures in society to prevent bad things happening. That is the way we could get rid of Amalek. That is the way that we can build good families. That, I believe, is what this very problematic text is, at least is one of the things that this very, very problematic text is teaching us in the modern world. And finally, it can allow us to dream of a different life for Dina, a life for Dina in which her brothers cared about her, protected her, and perhaps for us to dream of something else, which seems very, very far from us today, but to dream of a world in which there's caring and understanding and acceptance on different sides, and to dream of a world in which Dina would be able to walk in the streets and not be hurt. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levenkurs. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your emails to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.